Geopolitical Horizon, the podcast from thegeopolitics.com. Now, it's been a really bad week for Pakistan. They had a major blackout, the national grid failed, and so most of Pakistan was left without power last week. On top of that, the Pakistani rupee, it's dived to a historic low against the dollar. So Pakistan's on the edge of an economic crisis. A lot of questions, is Pakistan going to be the next Sri Lanka? We've got Adnan Khan, the founder of Geopolitics, to go through this with us. How are you keeping, Adnan?
I'm good, Yusuf. I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Now, could you, first of all, for myself and other people, we've not really visited Pakistan. Could you explain this situation?
Yeah, no problem, Yusuf. Unfortunately, Yusuf, this is not a new problem. It's not something that just come due to some sort of crisis. Pakistan's economy is regularly in crisis. Unfortunately, crisis economics seems to be the norm in Pakistan. As you started, Pakistan's national grid collapsed. It went offline. There was no electricity across the whole country for the most part of a day. And that's really, the fact that Pakistan was in the dark shows you the level of the problems. And alongside that, you've got a host of economic problems that are really all coming together. So you've got inflation, which is running in double digits. Food inflation is at 30%. Keep in mind, Yusuf, I think 85% of the country lives on less than $5 a day. So inflation of 5% will hurt. When it's 30%, it's really, really going to hurt your average person on the street. Then you've got the national debt, which is going through the roof. Pakistan's debt, which we can discuss in more detail, a significant amount is due this year. And Pakistan seems to always be in debt and always be in the scenario where they're unable to repay their debt. And as you mentioned, Pakistan's currency is really falling through the roof. And the reason why that's important is Pakistan imports significant amount of goods such as energy, such as fertilizer, and critical components for industry. And if your currency is going through the roof, these are becoming more and more expensive. And all of these are coming together in a perfect storm.
Now, there's a lot of talk about Pakistan potentially defaulting. What does that actually mean in real terms? Can a country still survive even if it has defaulted?
Well, with these sort of questions, Yusuf, Pakistan has an external debt of nearly $100 billion. And about half of that is owed to the IMF. And then about $40 billion is owed to the Paris Club. And the remainder is owed to different organizations. You've got the G20 and you've even got China as well. Now, Pakistan's been on, I think, over 20 IMF programs where they've borrowed money. And part of borrowing the money was they would make changes, structural changes to the economy. So the first of these programs began in 1958. And after all these decades, Pakistan is still in a worse-off situation. So this money and these structural adjustment programs and this national debt has not helped Pakistan one bit. So the discussion of will Pakistan be able to pay, will it not be able to pay, it really deflects from the real issue on the ground in the country. Whether Pakistan pays the debt or not, it doesn't make one difference to Pakistan. It doesn't make one difference to the 222 million people of Pakistan. It had an impact, obviously, on them. If you default, what you're now saying is we are unable to repay our debt. And all of you are owed this money, all 100 billion, you're not going to get a penny. What it then means is no one else will lend to you. And because Pakistan is so dependent upon imports, because it's so dependent upon borrowed money, that will create an even bigger problem for the country. So really, the way the rulers of Pakistan look at it is on one side, we've got the Sri Lanka type scenario where we become a failed state. And then you've got the other scenario where it will cost half of our budget nearly to repay the debt. So there'll be little left for the people, but we still limp on. They're the two bad choices the country has to choose from. And that's the problem you really have here. So keep in mind, 100 billion debt in the global scale is nothing. America's debt goes to trillions. The French debt is I think America's debt goes into, it's more than the economy. The Japanese debt is 300% of their economy. It goes into trillions. So the grand scheme of things, Pakistan's debt isn't that high. Relative to the economy, yes, it is high. When you have an economy worth about 300 billion and your debt is 100 billion, that's just your external debt. We're not including the domestic debt. This does become a problem. So what it shows you is all of these economic problems are really just features. They are more fundamental structural issues of the Pakistan's economy. And that's why every 2 or 3 years this happens. Pakistan's struggling to pay his debt. Pakistan's struggling to pay for his imports. Poverty is increasing. So it's like a recurring cycle. And unfortunately, you know, I've given you loads of numbers, but these things really hurt the people of Pakistan on the ground.
You mentioned that the IMF has given out, I think you said, 20 different loans to Pakistan. So this is, like you said, a recurring problem. Is this particular situation any different to the past instances this has happened?
When you constantly borrow, what you're effectively saying is when you first lent me the loan, I've not been able to turn it into something productive. So now I need more money in order to survive. So what you're doing, you're borrowing in order to repay existing loan. So you're never going to get through this because you're borrowing to repay. So each time you repay, you've got to repay that repayment. So you've got into a vicious cycle. And this, you're right, it begs the question. No bank in their right mind will lend money to a person like this. If you're struggling to repay debt, if you're borrowing to repay, why would I lend to you? It's very unlikely you're going to be able to repay me back and you're only going to get further debt. And this brings us to a broader discussion. You know, the IMF has not helped any economy it's lent to. That is not the IMF's job. The IMF was set up after World War II. It's part of America's global liberal order. And the aim here really is to make you dependent upon loans. So the IMF can then use this to transform and make changes to your economy that suit America. And this is not something I'm saying. There's a lot of research on this. And it's actually accepted the IMF is actually the problem. It's actually not the solution. The problem is when countries get into problems, very few banks will lend to them. So as a result of that, they all turn to the IMF because the IMF lends. And the IMF lends because it gets concessions out of you. It forces you to change your economy. It forces you to become part of the global liberal order and you serve them. So it's really a political institution rather than a purely economic institution that's there to actually develop you. So that's why, not surprisingly, Pakistan hasn't developed. In fact, some research shows Pakistan is actually deindustrialized, with more industrial in the past. And the more you implement IMF policies, the more you hamstring your economy.
So if that's the case with the IMF, and it seems to be something which is well known, is happening repeatedly with not just Pakistan and other countries, what can Pakistan actually do to come out of this situation? And why hasn't that happened already?
Well, the reason why Pakistan hasn't done it is because the rulers of Pakistan, be they the military or be they civilian, they are only there to effectively loot the country. So they have no problem rolling over Pakistan's debt because they still make a profit. They're there to loot the country. They're there to really milk the country for their own. That's why, not surprisingly, Nawaz Sharif and Benazir Bhutto were booted out of government so many times for corruption. Nawaz Sharif was booted out in 2018 because of corruption, because of the money he used to build or purchase property abroad. So what these rulers do is they're there for 4 years at most, one term. And what they do is they roll over any debt, any long-term decisions. They agree to the terms because they won't be around to repay it. So what they do is they utilize their term in office to loot the nation and to enrich themselves. And the broader economy, they just roll over and sell it out to the IMF. And that's why, for example, the last IMF loan that was taken under Nawaz Sharif, the IMF forced social changes upon Pakistan. So they forced Pakistan to agree to laws regarding LGBTQ and trans laws, which had got nothing to do with the economy. And in the end, the Pakistan Parliament passed it because they needed the money. Now, why on earth is a bank asking you to make social reforms when it's there primarily to help you economically? That's why the Pakistani rulers successively do it. So how does Pakistan get out of this? Well, you can't keep doing the same. What you can't be doing is going back to the IMF when clearly it's a political institute. It represents America, it represents the liberal order. So surely what you can't do is keep doing the same, going back to the IMF. Surely not doing what the IMF says is the way out of this. So what that means is Pakistan needs to develop its economy. Now, Pakistan gained independence the same time as Australia, as South Korea, as these countries. Look at those countries compared to Pakistan. Pakistan shares a border with China. China, 40 years ago, was poorer than Pakistan. 90% of China's population was living under the poverty line. They were so poor, China used to ration bicycles and fans. China's developed, but not by going to the IMF, not by borrowing money, but actually developing their country. They invested in infrastructure. They invested in their industry. And that attracted Western companies to come and work there. But China didn't establish its economy based upon the needs of the West. It made sure that it developed its own economy. So today, China's it's the second largest economy. It's the world's largest exporter. It's an industrial monster. That was not the case 4 decades ago. So really, if there's any lesson from all of this, is not following the liberal order, actually utilizing the resources you've got in your own country, that would be where you begin in terms of developing your economy.
I guess with that approach, you would actually make the country less dependent on imports and therefore not fall into this situation.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you look at, I mean, this is the usual prescription. You need to import less and export more. Now, Pakistan's main export is textiles. And Pakistan can't really compete. It can't compete with Bangladesh and China. Bangladesh and China, I think, the largest textile exporter in the world. Pakistan can't compete with that. Now, but why are you only exporting textiles? Surely you've had enough time to develop other industries and other goods. But that, no one's done that because, firstly, keep in mind, half of Pakistan's history, the military has been in power. And no civilian regime has ever finished their term. They've always been overthrown or they've been removed from office. So there's been no long-term planning in Pakistan. Even when the military's been in power, they've focused more short-term issues rather than more long-term. And that's why any success Pakistan has had is really been at the risk by private individual businessmen. It's not been because of the government. It's been despite the government, whether it was civilian or not. So at the moment, I think Pakistan's imports are about 60 billion and its exports are between 30 to 40 billion. So, you know, it's in a massive trade deficit. But its main export is textile. That's not really going to bring in any revenues. And Pakistan imports key things. It imports energy. It imports key critical components for industry. So there's no longevity in this. That needs to be changed. So what this all means, Yusuf, is there's no short-term fixes to this. The short-term fixes has now become a long-term strategic problem. The only way out of this is you need to completely uproot what you've been doing. But what you find, for example, from the government, is they result in short-term fixes. To give you some examples, the government's strategy has been to reduce imports. So what they're doing is they're reducing their energy use by shutting malls early, by shutting government buildings early, by telling people to use less energy. That's been the government's strategy. The government's strategy has been to resort to borrowing from friendly countries like China, like Saudi Arabia. None of these are long-term fixes. And now that the electricity grid is struggling, how are you going to run your economy when businesses have no electricity? And load shedding, which is where you reduce electricity in some areas so the electricity grid can work, that doesn't help industry. If I've got a factory and there's no electricity, how can I produce things? How will the economy improve? And just to let you know, Yusuf, Pakistan has gas reserves. Pakistan has offshore reserves. Pakistan has nuclear weapons. It can have a nuclear industry. None of these are immediate term fixes, but these are long-term fixes. And you'd think after 75 years of Pakistan's independence, some of these will be in place now.
Now, it seems like the people of Pakistan, they're looking for something different. Imran Khan, the previous prime minister, he still has a lot of supporters. A lot of people are under the impression that he helped Pakistan and the economy. How true is that?
So yeah, you're right, Yusuf. People want to change, and Imran Khan, much like Donald Trump, he offered change. He spoke the right things, that we need to get rid of the corrupt people. We need to make some changes to the economy. Similar to Trump, you know, we've got to stop what China's doing to us. We've got to stop our support for global conflicts. But what you find, once Imran Khan was in power, all the populism went out the window. You find, in fact, he pursued policies which were no different to the previous regime. So after lambasting Nawaz Sharif for going to the IMF, within 6 months, he went back to the IMF, expecting something different to happen. And then what you find is, like many of the previous rulers, Imran Khan got very busy dealing with the domestic political disputes. You got to keep in mind, Yusuf, that Imran Khan's party, the PTI, Pakistan Tehreek Insaf, it's not a real political party. It literally is Imran Khan, the personality. So Imran Khan, to get into power, he had to reach out to the political heavyweights from the other parties. And because the wind was going in his direction, they all joined him. But now he had a problem. After becoming prime minister, he's got heavyweights in his party who are more influential than him. So as a result, it led to a lot of domestic and internal intrigue, which he got busy with. And he just kept blaming the opposition for everything. So in the end, the economy, before he took over, inflation was single digits. Once he took over, inflation got to double digits. The economy was growing about 5% before Imran Khan. Once Imran Khan took over, that halved. All of this was before COVID. COVID just made an already bad situation far worse. What Imran Khan was very good at is blaming the opposition and talking about how good things will be. So after 3 years in power, people had enough. People realized you were all talk. And that's when he got overthrown, he then used this conspiracy that America overthrew him and had the corrupt people back in power. So he managed to get the sympathy of the people. But the situation for your average person really was made worse by Imran Khan. And it's just got even worse after then to where we are now. So Imran Khan, like Trump, he talked the talk, but he delivered on.
Then another thing that we're hearing a lot about is completely changing the system and going for something like a technocratic government. What's your views on that?
So at the moment, the political class are in such bad position. You've got all of the people that were around Imran Khan, they failed. Since then, Shahbaz Sharif and the Sharif family, he took over, and things have got even worse. So politicians just look really, really bad. And it looks as though they're going to go for the IMF loan, but they're going to have to do some painful policies, which are really going to hurt the people. They have to cut subsidies. They're going to have to put prices of energy up. So no politician wants to do this because they know in the long term, this is a policy that's really going to hurt the people and people are going to turn against you. So there's a lot of talk now of bringing in a technocratic government. But we've had technocratic governments in the past. All they've done is just implemented unpopular policies and made things even worse. So a technocratic government is not they're going to do something different. It just means that different faces are going to implement the same policies. And really, the technocratic government is something the political class can hide behind. And we've been here before. None of this is new. We've had technocratic governments in the past. And it's really just different faces doing the same thing.
One final question for you, Adnan. Where do you think Pakistan is headed?
Well, on the current trajectory, it's not good. You know, the economic problems will just get worse. What I think will happen, Yusuf, is they'll get the IMF loan. And in the medium term, they will implement the IMF prescription, which will hurt the people on the ground. With America effectively out of Afghanistan, they've got a bit more leeway of dealing with Pakistan. When America was in Afghanistan, the relationship became quite contentious and many congressmen felt Pakistan wasn't doing enough. That's not a factor anymore. In fact, relations between Pakistan and America are quite friendly at the moment. And none of that actually helps the people on the ground. Whether America's friendly terms or unfriendly terms with Pakistan, it actually means nothing to the people on the ground. The situation of the people is still worse. However, you've got some interesting developments. You've got the rise of China. You've got Russia. You've got Central Asia. You've got obviously got America as well. You've got the Taliban government. The problem Pakistan is, historically, it's always been about what camp are you going to be in? Are you going to be in the communist camp with China? Or are you going to be in the camp with America? Why does Pakistan need to be in any camp? Why can't Pakistan forge an independent course? Why can't Pakistan unify with Afghanistan and Central Asia? Why can it not unify with the wider Muslim world? That would be where Pakistan should really be looking. Being in one camp or the other, Pakistan's done this historically. It joined America in the Cold War. It joined America when the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan. It joined America in the War on Terror. And here we are. Pakistan's economy is still in the doldrums. Pakistan's economy is still struggling. And, you know, really joining a camp doesn't help. There is a debate some people have. Look, China's not like America, it's not imperial. But, you know, Pakistan's going to stop acting as the battered wife in an abusive relationship where she goes from the abusive partner, America, to another partner. China really wants to lure Pakistan away from America. But it doesn't have anything to offer Pakistan. What Pakistan needs to do is forge an independent cause. And it's got 2 billion Muslims for that, which Pakistan actually advocates. And Pakistan really needs to start developing its economy. China, who had more challenges, has been able to develop. Pakistan doesn't have the challenges China had. It can develop, but That needs long-term planning. It needs politicians who don't think through the election cycle of one term only. And it means Pakistan needs to make use of the resources that it's full of and start from there, really. And that would really be the way forward for Pakistan.
Thank you for your time today, Adnan. If you want to learn more about the issues raised today, check out our website, www.thegeopolicy.com. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel as well. You can also learn more on many other issues by accessing our websites. Thank you for listening.